Chapter 4. The woman moved along a row of white boxes that bordered the woods beside the pink house. A house so pink, it remained a scorched shock on the back of my eyelids after I looked away. She was tall, dressed in white, wearing a pith helmet with veils that floated across her face, settled around her shoulders, and trailed down her back. She looked like an African bride. Lifting the tops off the boxes, she peered inside, swinging a tin bucket of smoke back and forth. Clouds of bees rose up and flew wreaths around her head. Twice she disappeared in the fogged billows, then gradually reemerged like a dream rising up from the bottom of the night. We stood across the road, Rosaline and I, temporarily mute. Me out of awe for the mystery playing out, and Rosaline because her lips were sealed with red rose snuff. "She's the woman who makes the Black Madonna honey," I said. I was unable to take my eyes off her, the mistress of bees, the portal into my mother's life. August. Rosaline, wilting, spit a stream of black juice, then wiped away the mustache of perspiration above her lip.
"I hope she makes honey better than she picks out paint."
"I like it," I announced. We waited till she went inside, then crossed the highway and opened the gate in the picket fence that was about to topple over from the weight of Carolina jasmine. Add that to all the chive, dillweed, and lemon balm growing around the porch, and the smell could knock you over. We stood on the porch in the pink light shining off the house. June bugs flickered all around, and music notes floated from inside, sounding like a violin, only a lot sadder. My heart kicked in. I asked Rosaline if she could hear it beating. It was that loud.
"I don't hear nothing but the good Lord asking me what I'm doing here."
She spit what I hoped was the last of her snuff. I knocked on the door while she muttered a slew of words under her breath.
"Give me strength, baby Jesus. I'm lost off feeble minds."
The music stopped. In the corner of my eye, I caught a slight movement at the window. A Venetian blind slid open, then closed. When the door opened, it was not the woman in white, but another one, wearing red. Her hair cut so short, it resembled a little gray curlicue swim cap pulled tight over her scalp. Her face stared at us, suspicious and stern. I noticed she carried a musical bow tucked under her arm like a riding whip. It crossed my mind she might use it on us. "Yes? Are you August Boatwright?"
"No, I'm June Boatwright,"
she said, her eyes sweeping over the stitches on Rosaline's forehead.
"August Boatwright is my sister. You came to see her?"
I nodded, and simultaneously another woman appeared, with bare feet. She wore a green and white sleeveless gingham dress and short braids that stuck straight out all over her head.
"I'm May Boatwright," she said. "I'm August's sister, too."
She smiled at us, one of those odd grins that let you know she was not an altogether normal person. I wish June with her whip would grin too, but she only looked annoyed.
"Is August expecting you?" she said, directing her words to Rosaline.
Of course, Rosaline jumped in, ready to spill the whole story.
"No. See, Lily has this picture," I broke in.
"I saw a honey jar back at the store, and the man said,
'Oh, you've come for honey. Well, why didn't you say so? Come on in the front parlor, I'll get August.'"
I shot a look at Rosaline that said, "Are you crazy? Don't tell them about the picture." We were going to have to get our story straight, that was for sure. Some people have a sixth sense, and some are duds at it. I believe I must have it, because the moment I stepped into the house, I felt a trembling along my skin, a traveling current that moved up my spine, down my arms, pulsing out from my fingertips. I was practically radiating. The body knows things a long time before the mind catches up to them. I was wondering what my body knew that I didn't. I smelled furniture wax everywhere. Somebody had gone over the entire parlor with it. A big room with fringe throw rugs, an old piano with a lace runner, and cane-bottom rockers draped with afghans.
Each chair had its own little velvet stool sitting before it. Velvet. I went over and rubbed my hand across one of them. Next, I walked over to a drop-leaf table and sniffed a beeswax candle that smelled precisely like the furniture wax. It sat in a star-shaped holder next to a jigsaw puzzle in progress, though I couldn't tell what picture it would make. A wide-mouthed milk bottle filled with gladiolus was perched on another table under the window. The curtains were organdy, not your average white organdy, but silver gray, so the air came through with a slightly smoky shimmer. Imagine walls with nothing on them but mirrors. I counted 5 of them, each one with a big brass frame around it. Then I turned around and looked back toward the door where I'd come in. Over in the corner was a carving of a woman nearly 3 feet tall. She was one of those figures that had leaned out from the front of a ship in olden times, so old she could have been on the Santa Maria with Columbus for all I knew. She was black as she could be, twisted like driftwood from being out in the weather, her face a map of all the storms and journeys she'd been through. Her right arm was raised, as if she was pointing the way, except her fingers were closed in a fist. It gave her a serious look, like she could straighten you out if necessary.